How are you doing this morning?
Outstanding.
Congratulations on being on the sitting city council that maybe had the shortest meeting in College Station City
epic.
Council history.
Yeah. It was truly amazing.
Yeah, well, you had no agenda, right? That'll probably never happen again, and probably the next meeting you'll make up for it.
Exactly. Yeah. We always do pay the piper on those.
Yeah, you do. Been a while since you've been in, so kind of want to just talk about some things with you. The last few elected officials from College Station we've had in, we've talked impact fees. Now, there are a lot of different kinds of impact fees. I think mostly people think, oh, something that's citywide, and I want to talk about that in a minute. But the first one let's talk about is impact fees for new development in College Station. As one member of council, what are your thoughts there?
Well, can we just call it what it is?
Okay.
Can we just call it a tax instead of impact
fee? With me if you want to.
A tax is money that citizens pay for the operation of the government, right? That's generally the definition of tax, and that's what this would be. When you look at traffic impact fees or like Brian has a transportation fee on the utility bill. It's not a fee, it's tax, right? I mean, they're all taxes. It's just different ways of different people paying different amounts of money. So either everybody splits the cost on something, that would be through your property tax bill, which of course is not even. Y'all were this morning talking about everyone paying a flat tax, and of course we don't have that because
we have
phase outs for senior citizens and we have carve outs, and right? There's no simple tax rate, even at property tax level. Even at sales tax, right? Nonprofits still are exempt, and so no one pays exactly the same tax, even on local taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a way of loading taxes on the newer homes or newer businesses so that the older homes and older businesses don't have to share in the cost for the development of the infrastructure. The common phrase used is making development pay for itself. Of course, what ends up happening is all of it gets baked into the price of a lot or a home. It doesn't get absorbed by the developer. They pass the fees on to whoever's buying the lot. So the lot prices go up, which means the cost of living goes up. And so, you know, you've got a bunch of different things. I do respect and understand people who have pushed for these to some extent because it does make sense that what a new development consumes, it should hopefully pay for most of that. But that's why I'm opposed to a transportation fee, because it's an ongoing levy in the utilities bill. I'd rather just call it a tax and include it in property tax. Impact fees are a little different, and they try to load it, but you just have to really be careful that you don't outprice yourself on the market. Gotta watch it.
Okay, you've defined it for me. I ask you how you felt about it. I mean, what's the stand? How do you vote
you
on
didn't,
that?
You didn't like my dodgy answer.
No,
there?
I didn't. I want to know how you vote on that, number one. And number two, what's a good number? What's a fair number in College Station?
I'm going to wait to say whether a specific number is a fair number to when staff actually gets to present final recommendations. I get to spend some more time meeting with them.
You're okay with the concept of an impact tax, then? I'll call it a tax, because that's what you want to say.
It is a tax.
You're okay with doing that?
I'm okay with a minimal impact tax, but I certainly think that there are people in town who would like to load all the costs of growth on top of impact fees, and that's problematic because those same people are going to be paying property and sales tax, and the people who don't. The irony is the people who are arguing for impact fees, most of them didn't pay them on their own homes when their neighborhoods were built, and the existing residents paid.
Well,
so this is a do as I say and not as I did situation.
I can't talk to my mom about frozen senior citizen property tax. We just can't have that conversation because it's different.
Exactly. But so that's why I'm okay with it in concept if it's minimal and reasonable. I think that people have to remember that their homes were built without these impact fees, and when their homes were built, somebody else was upset about paying for the infrastructure at their house.
Okay, well, but, you know, College Station's passed 75 years now. That means we're getting toward 100, and there are going to be infrastructure things that are going to be needed in the older neighborhoods, and that's something new and different.
Yes,
and have to have that.
And everyone else will be expected to pay for those.
They will. Yep, you're right.
And all of these new neighbors are going to be asked to pay for the infrastructure overhaul cost on the old neighborhoods, and how are they going to feel about that?
Well, let's talk about roads, and I know you want to talk about embedding things in them, but I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about...
If we talked about what I want to talk about with roads, it would not be what you want to talk about with roads.
All right, let's talk about surface roads. Now, do we want harder surface roads? Do we want flexible surface roads? Do we want to go to concrete roads?
Flexible pavement has been a disaster here in Brazos County. I mean, all you have to do is go drive down Francis, Munson, any asphalt street that's older than 6 years old. I'm in South College Station, and the new neighborhoods in South College Station, our roads are alligator cracking and having significant issues at 5 to 6 years of life. That is absolutely pathetic performance. So you have two options with flexible pavement. You either go much deeper, right? You make a much thicker section of asphalt and a much bigger section of rock underneath it and fill dirt, which makes it extremely expensive, right?
Yeah.
In fact, if we went to the cross-section we probably really need for our soil here, it would be more expensive than rigid pavement by the numbers that have been presented to me. Now, those numbers, we could argue over whether or not they're 100% correct, but it is extremely, and even then, you'll still have cracking, and it still won't perform as good as concrete will. And so we have a fundamental question to ask, and that is, do we want to bankrupt ourselves in 20 years trying to maintain these roads? And I think in these types of cases, and you can tell how I'm going to vote on this, in these types of cases, you have to pick the lowest cost, total cost of ownership. And I'm in the construction technology business. That's why we're going to avoid talking about sensors and roads and smart roads and a bunch of other things. But I'll tell you, we look in buildings, we look at the total cost of ownership of a building. And it is very often, in fact, almost 100% of the time, it's better that you invest the money up front, you build the best building possible for the lowest total cost of ownership. And the same thing applies to our roads.
James Benham joining us from College Station City Council. Three things. So I need short answers. Three things that define quality of life in College Station.
I don't really do short answers.
Yeah, okay. Three things that define quality of life in College Station is your view.
Schools, safety. And I would definitely say neighbors. If I had to peg the top three, fourth churches. I mean, our church.
Well, that's fine. School, okay, we're going to set aside because that's not in your purview. Safety, okay. I do want to talk about neighbors. I want to talk about you're on a city council that has had some opportunities to allow larger lots in new undeveloped areas, and you've chosen not to. I'm thinking of the Margraves tract. Where you allowed as it was platted, there were estate-sized lots in there. That means an acre. You decided not to do that.
Wasn't so platted. Whoa.
No, excuse me. Was designed. Was not platted. Was designed to have.
No.
Okay. What?
No.
Okay.
It was on the comp plan.
Okay.
It was not designed for estate. It was not platted for estate. It was on the comp plan.
It was going to be defined. Portion of it was. All right. So, folks, know this is near Tower Point. But you decided not to do that. So you're going to develop an area that's going to have 3,500 rooftops.
Well, a private developer will develop an area that has 30
lots of people. Okay, but y'all are the ones who said it's okay to do it this way. That's a lot of population density. Doesn't that hurt the quality of life as well?
Absolutely not. People live in dense urban areas that are far more dense than 3,500 homes in that area and have a great quality of life. I think that's an absolute fallacy. I mean, I as part of my job, I get to travel all over the world. In fact, you guys were talking about golf in China. I played golf in China 2 years ago.
Wow, you weren't arrested.
Right before the ban. The urban density there is staggering compared to ours. And people there still had what they considered a good quality of life. My friends in Argentina live in a much higher density, and I consider it a good quality of life. So I think this fallacy of density, and keep in mind, this is restricted suburban we're talking about. It's not even the highest density single home use. It's not even the highest density single home use.
Sure, understand.
So I think we have to escape from this this thought process that somehow more people is bad. It is physically impossible as long as families keep reproducing at a rate higher than 2.1, which is like the replacement rate.
Okay.
As long as that keeps happening, we have to have places for people to live. Now, we have two options. We can make room for them in the city, or they can go live in the county and congest roads and congest infrastructure getting into the city to work. So,
well, you're making them bad people for living in the county?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. But then it becomes a big issue because we have to maintain the infrastructure they use to get in, but we don't get any of the taxes on the property to help pay for it. So we have a distinct choice, and that is, do we want to force people out or do we want them here? So you have this buffer zone that is College Station ISD, but it's not the city of College Station, and that is high demand territory.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to just be realistic that people want to be in the school district, families want to be in our school district, and I want to thank my friends on the school board. I really appreciate all the work they do. Both of my children are in College Station public schools, and we love it. They're mm-hmm. great. It is one of the big reasons we live in College Station because our children get a great education. We have great neighbors. And so I think we'd be realistic they want to live here, and we have to provide places for them to live. And restricted suburban is actually a bigger lot size than a lot of the neighborhoods that are on William D. Fitch. The people that were upset about this were upset that something that was on the plan was going to be used as planned.
Mm-hmm. I know.
They were upset that a road that was planned to be a thoroughfare was going to be used as such.
Right.
People make these assumptions that somehow, since we plan for thoroughfares and design them as thoroughfares, that somehow we just decide not to use them as thoroughfares. And that's again not a great decision. And I sympathize with their concerns for safety and traffic and congestion and people speeding down the road. But that road was planned to be used as thoroughfare from the beginning.
An ongoing, James Benham joining us from City of College Station, an ongoing discussion for the city that College Station has to take the challenge that a lot of cities do. And we heard it as they were discussing attendance zones for CSISD this week, affordable housing. What does College Station do to provide affordable housing for those folks who do want to live here, and it's just tough to do right now?
We just talked about it.
Okay.
You drive lot sizes up, you make things more expensive.
Right.
You want affordable homes, allow for a variety of housing types. It's the exact same argument we had a few weeks ago when we had people opposing apartments, as if apartments are somehow the root of all evil. I lived in apartments for 2 years
right.
when I first got married.
Didn't we all?
In College Station.
Right.
We had to live there for 2 years because
right.
we couldn't afford a home. So if you want affordable housing, you have to provide for a variety of zoning districts, including multifamily. And you have to say, okay, look, not everybody can afford to buy a house. Some of them need to live in apartments. Some of them need to live in small lotted homes. Some of them need to live in restricted suburban instead of estate. There's a lot of people who can't afford estate lots.
This is an atypical market, though, because of a large university here. I mean, apartments are not inexpensive here.
No.
The way they are leased quite often is not an inexpensive way for a family.
No, which is why we started doing it, and we actually set a precedent in the last meeting of conditional use permits prohibiting by-the-bedroom leases and a whole bunch of other things that would typically lend themselves to student housing that really ends up driving those prices up. If you look at market rate apartments versus student apartments, the prices are very different. In a student apartment, it's by-the-bedroom, and it's very expensive because it includes all utilities, it includes furniture, it includes a whole bunch of amenities. And you go to market rate apartments, they don't include those. They're not by-the-bedroom. In fact, we legally prohibit them from being by-the-bedroom. They have a different amenity set, and so the pricing is different. And so you're right. You have different rates on apartments. Yes, absolutely.
Well, you're a free market guy. Did
I
that
am.
Kind of bother you?
Because the free market is highly efficient.
Yeah.
The free market, when government doesn't interfere in the operations of the free market to too high of an extent. Now, there okay. is a case. There is a case for government intervention in all ways. And I'll tell you, as I served on planning and zoning and then on city council, I came to appreciate why we have zoning. Because I don't want us to be like Northwest Houston. Every time I drive through Northwest Houston, I go, thank goodness we have zoning.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say this is a conservative Republican free market capitalist saying, I am glad we have some zoning. It does allow us to plan for infrastructure. It does allow us to plan for serving the needs of our citizens. But when it becomes a tool to discriminate against different classes of people because you don't want to live next to them, that's when I have a huge problem with it. Zoning is there so that we can effectively serve our population, not so we can discriminate against people who can't afford homes. And so that's my biggest beef with this, is that we have to fight the urge to say that just because someone doesn't live the way that we do, they're not as good as us. You know, because in capitalism, you say, let the market decide,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And so the market will decide what the best, highest and best use, and that's the term that real estate developers use. Let the market decide what the highest and best use is, and let's make sure that we can police it. Let's make sure we can serve it with roads. My biggest concern with all the rezonings has been traffic. How do we manage traffic? How do we manage roads? And we had this yet again, people questioning our traffic engineers and questioning the entire traffic engineering industry. The entire industry. They questioned all of their credentials. Decades of research that show that a retail store generates a higher traffic count than an apartment. And for about the last 150 people that came in front of council, they said, that's ridiculous, and then they would laugh. And I'm like, well, this is decades of research. Retail generates more traffic. Mm-hmm. The high-density general commercial retail generates, it's proven to generate about double the amount of traffic of an apartment. And so you have to really look at that. And that was this rezoning was, should it be general commercial? Right. Our apartments said we want general commercial to be less traffic. Well, that's a fallacy. It won't. It'll be double the traffic. And so you've got to make decisions based on the facts, not the feelings. And I got highly criticized for even saying that. But feelings will lie to you. And feelings will allow for your inner biases to make lead to discriminatory action against people who aren't like you. But facts force you to deal with the fact that different people live different ways, and the market will support them if we allow it to.
Okay, I'm going to give you a minute to talk about what you want to talk about.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'll be honest. I love technology. I need to remind everybody that the TED TAMU is going to be tomorrow. I got the honor of opening.
Put your plug in there.
I get the honor of opening it up. I'm really excited about it. It is sold out, so if you don't have a ticket, sorry, I guess you'll have to go on StubHub or something.
Be one next year. How's that?
Yeah, go next year. Yeah. Tech in Town is doing well. I'm super excited. The gig broadband rollout came to town. We have Wirestar came in as well and leased from the city, and they're deploying service right now in the city of College Station. I want to remind everybody that shops on Craigslist that our safe transaction zone is in the parking lot of the police department on Texas Avenue. That's right near Walmart and mm-hmm. right by Central Park. If you're conducting transactions online, it was a piece of legislation that pushed through several months ago. We have video surveillance. It is not actively monitored, so it's there to, in case something occurs, we can pull the surveillance tapes, but it's lit. It is video surveilled. It's in the parking lot of the police department. Please conduct transactions and exchanges that are legal in nature in this parking lot, because I see and hear about too many people getting ripped off on Craigslist exchanges. So sure. That's the other part of our – we had bandwidth. We have safe zones. The other thing that's coming very soon that I'm really excited about is our open data portal with the city of College Station. As a conservative, low-cost, high-transparency person, I really want everyone to be able to see all the data in the city of College Station. I don't want us to be able to hide behind walls of secrecy. And so we published an open data portal. We partner with a company called Socrata, and there's going to be, in the next coming months, an open data portal that anyone can go to a website and pull any piece of data that we publish, and we're going to be trying to publish as much as possible through this portal. It'll also be accessible to software developers so they can use publicly available city data inside their apps. And so I'm really, really excited. We're going to have a hackathon eventually once we have this up. Hackathons when you all come right. together and build solutions.
Right.
But I'm really excited about this move for transparency for the city of College Station. And on my last item, food truck parks, they're coming, folks. I'm excited. I'm not doing them. Somebody else is. Letters have been signed. And if you love food trucks, you're going to love a food truck park. And so those are kind of the update items. I'm really excited about what's coming, and I hope everybody remembers remember what a great city that we live in, and go and tell everybody about it. I know when I travel, I tell everybody in California when I go, and I just got back. I escaped without being taxed.
Good.
And I told them all about how great College Station, Texas was.
Bring your money and don't bring your politics.
Don't bring your politics.
James Benham, thanks for the time this morning.